This is Near Enough to Hell, a Ghost of El Paso story, part 8. We've had a couple weeks off, so we're back and we're excited to continue. We had previously ended starting up the Dusk Phase, so we have a bit more to resolve there. The way that we're going to do this is because we had ended last time with answering some questions, setting up some opportunities, we're going to recap kind of the state of things and where we left off with that. And also, when I assign the unseen prompt, I know we just started, but we will take a quick little break just to give everyone a little a minute to think about their prompts. And then we'll kick things off. So, as a reminder of where things currently are, we have three active threats, although I have a feeling some of them are about to get resolved real soon. The Daisy Man, Ghost Begone, and the Last Ride, Blackheart Vermilion. State of the Daisy Man is that the question was in fact answered to resolve the scenario. The Daisy Man is a living person, and the group had determined that it was Clarence O'Toole that Graves had met previously before this Irish gambler passing through on his tour of gambling through the American West. Now, I believe the theory on that one, it's been a minute, so correct me if I'm wrong, was that Clarence O'Toole basically had I actually don't remember now that I think about it. It was chaotic. Gonna cut in here.
Clarence O'Toole has been at the at this bar, and it like has been like going into like the tunnels and whatnot, and been like sort of transporting like the gold and like everything stolen into them. But he's been using magic to teleport through mirrors effectively. So like there is a mirror ground like mirror layer underground somewhere
Right.
underneath
Tunnels. Yep. Old
Alex.
tunnels. Yep. That's right.
And he needs all this money because he made a deal with the devil to like bring someone back from the dead. So, but however, we really
Gotcha.
didn't care about that much. But so we never declared about who
I
he's
think, yeah.
bringing back
Yeah,
specifically.
I think that was alluded to. I think we alluded to just like we barely touched on the actual deal part. I think it was like it was equal part symbolic, but also just like really undetailed beyond that, which I think is fine. It's just that there, he was getting the money for some supernatural purpose involving a person. Yeah. Yes, with the tunnels. And the thing with the Ghost Begone with Dr. Clarkson, well, basically, the OG Dr. Clarkson, the ghost, wants to possess the new Dr. Clarkson. You had rolled a 7 on that one, so that situation is pretty dramatic and complicated, which we'll get into. I had some thoughts about that. And there is no progression on The Last Ride of Blackheart Vermilion, but as a recap of just the overall state of things, there are three clues on that. That Deputy Wainwright was shot by an unseen shooter. A rumor that Jim McKinley, the coward Jim McKinley, had been seen working at O'Neill's, and also a never delivered telegraph addressed to the Stagecoach office to the coward Jim McKinley that just said El Paso is not safe, you need to get out. So that question is, where is the coward Jim McKinley hiding? Complexity 8. So we're still chipping away at that one. As for the rest of the Dusk Phase, just to set all this up, I don't believe we had any lingering mask prompts, so we will just cut through the rest of this. We're going to paint the scene about the Wounded Knight, since I don't believe we did that last time. I think this evening, let us discuss art in the Wounded Knight. Lovers always prepare and share poems, sketches, love letters, and other creations, even during the Wounded Knight. Given the opportunity to examine all of it, what strange through lines and motifs might an observer take note of?
I think that throughout all the love letters, all of these songs and poems, there's always a promise to meet each other in the afterlife or after death.
I want to say that there's always a bone and skull motif decorated, with flowers and whatnot. But yeah, we always see skulls in at the bottom of letters or artwork involving bones.
just the rate of like the art being made, the poems that are written, it's as though that they are writing these desperately so they wouldn't be forgotten amongst the living.
There are dogs in every, like they seemingly just kind of show up generally. But it's odd. Sometimes they're missing limbs or they're backwards or things like that.
Very good. Here's my question. So we've unlocked some opportunities, both on the Daisy Man and Ghost Begone. For the Daisy Man, you can resolve it by laying a trap for the Daisy Man, Clarence O'Toole, and then capture or destroy him, which will also grant you access to a new move and resolve the threat. For Ghost Begone, you simply just need to bring Dr. Clarkson under the control of the committee, and that resolves it. So with these resolution options in mind, you don't have to pursue both of them, but they're available to you. I'm going to go in character keeper order just for the sake of simplicity. I'd love to hear. Let's go see what each of you will be doing during the upcoming night phase in brief. Mother Calvo.
Oh boy. Oh boy, Alex. You had to ask me first.
Yes.
That's wild. That's wild that you would do that. I'm gonna help out with resolving. We gotta resolve both the Daisy Man and Ghost Begone, right?
You don't have to. You have the
I
available,
yeah, we
or
have the
it's the
available
option
too.
to, yeah.
Yeah, I think Mother Calvo will be available on hand for the Daisy Man. There we go.
Okay, good to know. Remember, you get a revision after everyone has gone. So,
I
Graves, what will
know.
you be doing?
The Daisy Man, I'm not gonna be any help with Dr. Clarkson. Keep me away from him.
Marshall Harrington?
I gotta do Dr. Clarkson.
And Arkansas McGee.
I will continue to be Andrew's wingman on this one.
Any revisions, or is that a solid plan? Graves and Ruth on the Daisy Man in Arkansas and Harrington on Ghost Begone. Very good. Very good indeed. Let me take a moment to review something very quickly. Okay. I'm going to assign us an unseen. We'll take a quick break so everyone can think about prompts. Tonight's unseen, with this in mind, let's see here. I didn't pick one in advance because I kind of wanted to see what you guys were definitely doing. Let's do the barkeep. This saloon is hopping more than an eight-legged jackrabbit. No one has time or a care in their head to learn the name of the one pouring drinks. A woman dressed in an ill-fitting men's suit serves the customers about as fast as they can order. The first prompt I'm going to give to Daniel. The second prompt I'm going to give to Wes. Third to B, and the fourth to Chaotic. We're going to take a 5-minute break. You can review your prompts and think about your upcoming actions during the night phase, and we will see how things kick off. So we will be right back. We begin the night phase. And we'll start with the first prompt on the barkeep unseen, whenever you're ready, Daniel.
Barkeep! A surly customer wants another. The bartender pours another fifth of whiskey into the glass, making another mental tabulation. What trick does the bartender do to keep the order straight and the amount owed calculated? And so underneath there's a shelf right below the bar, just out of sight, where the bartender like has glasses and mugs and things like that. But she has some playing cards there. She's got like the Joker, she's got like the King of hearts. She's got the Queen of Spades. She's got these cards out, and she uses those for the customers. And she has like some little rocks and some matchsticks and things that she has a system of how she can keep up with who's had what. And for the surly customer, we see that she has selected the Ace of Spades for him.
We will begin first, I think, with the Marshal and the Calamity. As you're walking through the streets of El Paso, things are strangely quiet. Not peaceful. There is a tension hanging in the air, but there's not nearly enough activity as there usually is, especially on Santa Fe Street. We see that there is a group of townsfolk who flick their eyes over at you, Andrew, with suspicion, maybe even outright disdain, and their voices whispering conspiratorially, and they turn and walk away from you, hastily walking to somewhere else entirely. We hear the bang of a gavel as we cut away for a quick moment to see an assemblage being held at the town hall without the vigilance committee. As a few various townsfolk are trying to bring it under order, we see a gentleman say, "All right, okay, everyone, settle down, settle down. Look, I understand folks is a little riled up, especially given recent events, but might as well not, well, waste any time. Let's get to the heart of the matter. You know why you're here? Do we even need the vigilance committee anymore?" And back on the streets with you two, you can see turning a corner the wagon of Dr. Jebediah F. Clarkson. For the first time in all the nights you've seen it around, almost entirely abandoned. A scant customer or two buying things up, but the majority of the town is elsewhere for the time being. Dr. Clarkson catches your eye, Andrew. What do you do?
Think I approach. Quiet night for you, Dr. Clarkson.
Indeed, indeed. Seems that the good people of El Paso are preoccupied elsewhere.
Oh, it makes a for a bit of easier to have a nice conversation. Frankly, I've figured out what all this business is, and I really don't blame you for what you've done, both in terms of this transaction with El Paso, let's say.
Whatever do you mean, Marshall?
Oh, I mean that you're playing with fire, Dr. Wilson, and eventually you're going to get yourself burned. However, not all of it is bullshit. I think I would like to extend an extension from the rest of the committee towards you for you to join with us.
Arkansas. As Marshall Harrington is speaking with Dr. Jebediah F. Clarkson, what are you doing?
He's looking back at the assemblage and at the town hall, and he takes out a matchstick from the rim of his hat, and he sees how much moonshine he has left in his canteen, and he said, "Did I hear you right, Marshall? You want me to start a fire and burn these jokers out?"
No, we're not doing that.
I mean, the town hall's far enough away from everything. Shouldn't cause too big of a par.
We're not burning down town hall. They are already very frustrated with us. But Dr. Clarkson, this is partly the reason why I'm sending this invitation towards you. But
You give us a
trust.
mite bit of accreditation, doctor.
Arkansas. There is a strange feeling welling up inside you. We see that there is a faint, cold, shimmering mist that flickers at the edges of Dr. Clarkson's wagon. Something that is in the periphery for everyone else. None of us catch it. But we know, the audience, that this spectral force is, while Andrew and Dr. Clarkson are conversing and distracted, targeting Arkansas. And it is stoking the fire of rage within you. Tendrils of ghostly energy touching at the raw nerves, at your thoughts towards the coward, Jim McKinley, your thoughts towards everything that went down with Blackheart Vermilion, your thoughts towards anything at all that just ruffles your feathers or grinds your gears or what have you, and is gently nudging and stoking them in the direction of Marshall Harrington and Dr. Clarkson. We'll get back to that momentarily. We cut to utter darkness, a gloomy, oppressive, heavy darkness, the soft, shifting tumble of rock and dust before a single flicker of orange cuts through the black. And with the creaking groan of a rusted lantern handle, we see Mother Calvo and Graves stalking down through the old, abandoned, I'd say at this point, mine beneath El Paso. What are you two doing?
I think I'm probably, well, right now I'm looking for signs of the Daisy Man's trail, see if he's been through here before. But I don't know, what is Mother Ruth Calvo's plan here?
Well, I'm thinking that maybe it's been going on here, Grace, is that you're going to be needing to rustle this fella for me, but by the grace of God, maybe shall perhaps be able to point him out. He might be a bit of a pervert, so he might need to be searching around a little bit, seeing if there's any pantaloons out on the wash or anything, as sinners are wont to do.
I'm not sure that that's his method, but I will keep an eye out. And don't worry, Ruth, I will handle him for you.
What type of person do you imagine is a freaky fellow that leaves behind flowers after breaking into people's homes by walking through walls, especially when people are getting to know each other biblically?
That's a fair point.
Pervert, that's right.
You're welcome to pass judgment, Mother Ruth. I'm just here to settle things. And it doesn't matter what he's doing, as long as he stops breaking the natural laws. I think we can agree on that.
Just keep your eyes out and keep count of things.
Keep count.
In case he starts running through walls, you want to know exactly how many walls he could be running through in case he runs out and he runs into one side and doesn't come out the other. Then you might need to count, make sure what room he's in.
All right.
And I figured you were the ne'er-do-well, knowing how to fist a cuff and hunt down gentlefolk and everything like that. You being how you were. No, it's me teaching you something. Miracles, small and great, never cease underneath his watchful gaze, my lord.
There is a sudden glint of light, and you realize after a moment's pause that it is because the lantern has reflected off the surface of a mirror down the shaft. And as you approach further, you find yourself entering a more open space with several mirrors that have been positioned around from an abundance of various sources, your light refracting off of them, casting strange patterns on the walls. And piled all around here is a lot of fucking money. And we're going to cut away. But before we go back to the unseen, Neil's bar. Neil is standing behind his bar, which is mostly empty. A haggard individual tosses a thimble full of whiskey back, setting down pay on the counter before saying, "You going to that assemblage the townsfolk are mustering, Neil?" And Neil, mopping the sweat from his brow as always, is, "Oh no, I don't wish to involve myself in matters of the locals. I will man the bar, as always. Yes, indeed. But if you find yourself in the position to want to go give it a listen, I'll keep the counter warm for you, my friend." "All right, well, you keep yourself safe, Neil." And as he stumbles out, Neil just nods, glances off to the side, nervously reaches under the bar and pulls out a bottle of Ghost Be Gone. Looking left and looking right nervously, he pulls out the cork and takes a kind of a quick sip and looks around before taking a deep breath and mopping the sweat from his brow once more. Let's go back to the unseen.
We see a dance hall girl who is bouncing between an entire table of prospectors and other nefarious gentlemen. She's setting down heavy mugs of beer, stroking cheeks and chins, blowing kisses. And the glasses cannot keep up with how much is being drunk from them. It seems no matter how quickly she moves on her feet, no matter how fast the bartender pours, they seem to want more and more and more at this table. The bartender, eager, as always, to serve more and more. That means more money in the till. That means more money at the end of the night. That means more money for them. Goes ahead and gives a wink to the dance hall girl. She gives him this look of bewilderment, confusion, and then understanding as she pats the side of her hip, not knowing what is underneath the skirt that she's wearing. But clearly there's something there. And she nods and winks back and turns back to one of the gentlemen who grabs her and sits her down in his lap and starts babying her a little bit, we'll call it.
Back on the streets of El Paso, Arkansas McGee, I need you to make the night move. As these feelings of rage are supernaturally stoked. The intention, I will say, is that the ghost is increasing your feelings of discomfort and rage. You do, after all, have weapons on hand and a pretty twitchy trigger finger. What are you afraid of happening here?
Well, he's got nothing but respect for the educated Dr. Clarkson, who's done a great deal for El Paso. Mm-hmm. So he would hate for him to get hit by a stray bullet. And the marshal needs McGee needs the marshal to help track down the coward Jim McKinley and bring him to justice. So he's afraid that he's gonna hurt one of those two guys.
Yes, it is indeed worse than that, because you'll hurt both of those guys. Mm-hmm. And both of them. That swelling of rage will find itself directed in a way that you are not going to be happy with. This is going to be rolled plus sensitivity.
Do I have sensitivity? No, I do not. I don't think I really have an item either.
I was going to say, I think being hungover, honestly, is a disadvantage on the grounds of your head's throbbing. There's already that feeling of discontent and discomfort, and it sure is easy to be quick to frustration when you're in such a state without your drink.
Then I'm going to roll 3 and keep the lowest 2.
All right.
which is good. 6, a 5, and a 4. I'll take that.
So it's a 9.
It's a 9, and I think I'm going to use a mask to bump it up to a 10.
Well, first of all, you have to let me narrate a complication.
Okay.
You always have to let me do that, Daniel. Which I'll come back to in a moment, so I'm thinking about it. I do want to clarify with Andrew, though, you've laid the whole thing out.
Yes.
To Dr. Clarkson. And his eyes are firmly locked on yours. His posture has not changed, but there is a stiffness in it. He's still very presentational towards anyone who might be looking at it, the genteel showman, the business entrepreneur, but there is a tension there.
Yeah, I think Andrew trying to break the tension just gives a smile and a wink at Dr. Clarkson. It's a little goofy, but sometimes it works.
I'm going to ask this to be the day move plus presence. You're trying to convince Dr. Clarkson to join your side and work. You've laid out everything to him. You've explained everything, what you want from him and what he can do for the people of El Paso more than he's providing now. But what are you afraid should you fail to be persuasive?
I think I'm afraid that the money is just too good for Dr. Clarkson, and so he would refuse, even to his own detriment and his own life.
Indeed. You may go ahead and roll. Because you are marked by the grifter, I'm going to give you disadvantage. This is there's a battle within happening here.
Mm-hmm. Here's the thing.
Okay.
For personal quarters items.
I'm listening.
I have a lather and a straight razor.
Did you shave before coming here? You got all stiffed up for your mans? All right. Yes. You can take it. You can mark it. I like that. That's cute. I really need to lean more into this then.
Andrew Harrington has it bad. And that's with presence. Mm-hmm. That's a 13.
Incredible.
He's just cute baby boy.
For Arkansas. Here's your 7 to 9 result, by the way. And then you can tell me if you're still going to mark a mask. You feel this increasing sense of anger, but you're able to snuff it and push it back. And it's just discomfort, it's just the hangover. But what we know is that the ghost of the real Dr. Clarkson is in turn getting quite angry with its efforts of subtlety being rebuffed. And as you stifle it, it is now going to manifest. The ghost begins to shimmer and appear, crackling with rage, hoarfrost spreading across nearby surfaces as Andrew and Dr. Clarkson, the false one, I should say, share a moment. The real Dr. Clarkson is deciding to hell with subtlety. It needs to be direct. That's going to be your complication, is that situation arising.
I'm going to put on a mask anyways, right. And I'm going to have a conversation with him. Now you hold on here. As per my new custom move.
Very good. We will address that momentarily. Mother Calvo in Graves. Inside this room of mirrors, many mirrors, all reflecting yourself back, glittering off of the jewelry, the literal bars of gold, and other stacks of ill-gotten gains. You rolled a 10 on this theory, so this is a pretty straightforward opportunity. What trap are you intending to lay here for the Daisy Man?
Unless Mother Ruth has, do you have one, Wes, that you had one in mind that I don't want to just like step on you?
Take it away, please. Mother Ruth is here for emotional and religious support.
It's a mean idea, but I have the Book of the Dead, the book that has every dead person's name in it, and this cat is trying to bring back somebody that he lost. I'm just saying, maybe that's the trap, is knowing who this person is and luring him with them. What is that? How does that settle? Is that too much? Is that too OP?
I mean, you got it. So, like, if you got it, then you got it.
That's my thought. So
good to
I think,
know.
Okay.
Good to know.
So I go ahead.
No, continue. I'm listening. I want to hear what you're so.
Oh.
If your intention is that with you have this book of names, then as we've mentioned, I mean, you are death. This is a fascinating idea. I'm going to just straight up ask you, B, because you are death. Who is it? Who is this person? As you scroll through the list, your old ledger of names.
It's his brother.
His brother. What do you remember about his brother when you claimed him before?
He didn't die quietly.
How are you using this knowledge to lay a trap?
That's where I think I need help. And I think actually, unless it is completely against the rules of revealing things, Graves turns to Mother Ruth and pulls out this little black book. You might have seen it before, Ruth. You might have, but I don't think you saw it with Bartholomew. It's something that's new but looks really old. And I have an idea, some information about this person and someone he lost. And I think that's really what we need to get him here. I don't think he cares about money. Even though this is a ludicrous thing, standing where we are. Do you think, with all of your religious, otherworldly knowledge, do you think we can get his attention through one of these mirrors?
What are you saying there now? What's that in your hand right there?
A list.
A list. Is it your list?
Yes.
Is it a very important list?
Yes.
Well, I reckon I should make sure that you don't go overboard with this, so I might as well do the reading. Hand it over.
All right.
Idle hands are the devil's work. Let's have a speed about it, please, before our opportunity to catch this person leaves.
And they hand it to you, and it is a list of names and places, and I don't even think the cause of death is in there. I think it's just names, place, time. The time is kind of bizarre because it is not written like BC, AD, it's just numbers that are completely illegible, but it is open on a book of, what is this cat's name? What is this man's name? I forgot it already. Clarence O'Toole. It's a, I think it is somebody give me a name that is not Clarence.
Marley.
Monroe.
Yeah.
Marley.
Yeah. Marley. Marley O'Toole.
You're a strange sort, Mr. Grace. Quite a strange sort. And I truly do not trust ye. I shall pray for you, though.
No need. But I do think that we can work together on this. There's no need not to trust me.
I shall pray double hard for you, then. Starts reading off the list of names loudly, saving the best for last, which is, you know, that name, mm-hmm. Marley.
Indeed. Yep. And back in El Paso at Neil's, which is now mostly empty, save for the proprietor himself, polishing glasses, wiping down the bar, sweeping up in the corner, occasionally sneaking a sip of Ghost Be Gone as he nervously looks around, mopping the sweat from his brow. There is the sound of something rustling, moving in a different room. He looks over his shoulder, alarmed but trying to maintain composure. Hello? Is someone back there? Hello? He glances off into the back of house, seeing no one on the tables, but seeing a door ajar. He swallows heavily, fumbles for a flask of Ghost Be Gone, takes another shaky sip, and mops the sweat from his brow. Let's go back to the unseen.
Barkeep, a new customer. The bartender pours a beer and shaves the foam off the top expertly, showing this currently sober patron that the bar is honest. For now. What about the new customer shows he has money he will soon be parted with? And I think the first thing we see this man do is reach into this satchel that he has, and it jingles when he reaches into it. It's conspicuous. Just slams down this handful of coins and bills. It is opulent. And he offers to buy a round for the entire bar. It's ludicrous, but he promises he has the funds, and he's visibly showing it to everyone. And there are people eyeing him. The dance hall girl even looks over at him from the lap of the other man and spies a target. There's another man on the edge of the bar fiddling with a gun, and he's eyeing him. There's poker players on the table just a few feet away that start to kind of wave him over. And the bartender looks at him, says, "Whatever you want."
Andrew, you stand in close proximity with Dr. Clarkson, who there is that tension in his body, but it gentles slightly. There's a soft relaxation. You see that he stifles the faintest quirk of a lip as he has a soft kind of almost boyish smile that he has to wrangle his face back under control. And he says, "Your aftershave is so potent, Marshall Harrington. Am I to assume you came out this evening all gussied up like a schoolgirl just to impress me? To sweet talk me into making questionable business ventures? All for what?"
Oh. A questionable business venture is, well, not exactly what I was aiming for. I'm more concerned about the sanctity of your soul. Yugal a wily ghost who is angry with you. And your tools, well, effective on the living members of El Paso, aren't exactly well received by the dead ones.
Snickers.
It's more concerned with your safety, and I consider myself to be charming enough, but, well, could never be too charming.
Now, since you got a 13, I want you to tell us what happened that really seals the deal and will, you know, convince him, and like what moment in particular, what this scene looks like. And I have an extra benefit for you, but I'll hold off until I hear your narration. Think on that for a second, because over with Arkansas, as the two of them continue to talk, Arkansas, that's when you notice the appearing spirit, the manifesting spectral form. But before it has the opportunity to begin to pursue its rage in full, you intercede with your new move, since you wanted to have a chat with this ghost. Since you now get a bonus to your presence when speaking with dead souls, I ask you this. What do you do? What do you say?
He walks over to the wagon where this cold aura is coming from. When he sees the spirit starting to manifest and feels its anger, he says, "Hey yo, what are you all riled up for there, old timer?"
The ghost, its face a twisted visage of horror, elongated jaw gaping wide, wheezing out, "He killed me.
He did what?
He killed me.
You know, you're dead. That's just, you know, you don't got to work anymore. You don't got to pay taxes. There's a lot of perks, fella. Can we just move on, or you need some revenge, or what you need?"
"My name stolen.
You need a drink, fella. That's what you need. Let's go get you a drink."
I'm gonna ask you to make the night move. I'm not gonna override your move. I will say you can still do this plus presence, even though this is with a ghost. I'll let you do it flat, but I guess, what are you afraid of happening?
Is he like chained up right now?
There are like spectral chains. Yeah. Like that.
I'm afraid that he'll break free of the chains, that are keeping him somehow in control.
Yeah. It's worse than that. He will then immediately go to possess Marshall Harrington.
All right. And now I do have an item I can use.
You do?
Yeah, I've got this dime novel. There's a story in this book here about a fella is really mad, and he just needed to take some time to chill out. And so do I have a disadvantage? Or can I roll?
No, you do not. So you'll have an advantage on this.
Okay.
With an extra plus one to the presence, as you chat up the ghost of the real Dr. Clarkson.
So that's a 7, 8, 9.
9. Very good. The ghost, writhing, wheezing, and fighting against its chains, the spectral energies are stilled, not fully quieted, but your presence, very disarming. The ghost takes on a less horrifying form. It begins to revert to a more ethereal reflection of what he may have once looked like in life, or at the very least, at the with minutes after his death. Haggard. And I think, as you speak to him, as you speak with the dead, I'll keep your complication pretty simple. Just to say, how does Arkansas feel speaking with the dead?
Sympathetic.
You can take sympathy for the dead as a condition. Meanwhile, under El Paso, I'd like the two of you to narrate how you resolve the Daisy Man. Since it's a 10, it's straightforward. Narrate the trap laid, how it manifests, and how you catch Clarence O'Toole in it. It is then your choice if you kill him or see him captured.
I think the concept of this is, as Mother Ruth is saying these names, they're all people that Clarence O'Toole knew. They're all from his hometown, and they're all people he at least spoke to. And she ends with his brother. And whatever mirror, sort of, it feels like he's there, not his brother, Clarence. Graves walks up to it and offers a gloved hand and thinks about the raven that he brought back just for a second and talks to Clarence like he's there and says, "You want to see him again? I can make that happen. Just come here." And if Clarence does step through, my gloves are still on, and I look to Mother Ruth. Don't say anything, but I do give her a, well, should I? Look, I'm going to let her decide whether we kill him or not. You're muted.
Young man, look me in the eyes, would you not?
Clarence O'Toole, in his pale yellow suit and green paisley waistcoat, bright orange tie, eyes hard, but afraid, cautious. His gaze meets yours.
Do you feel any remorse for any of the things you've done?
What I've done is take wealth from folk who weren't using it for any good and true purpose and putting it to something meaningful. I haven't hurt anybody. It's just money.
Was it meaningful? Or was it selfish? Twas money that was sitting in there, and it belongs to the bank, right and true. But there are people that do rely upon it to provide for their families. They do hard, honest work with it. It is one thing to take from a pile that's not being utilized, but it is another thing to take from those that have a reliance upon things. You're no Robin Hood at that point.
I have debts to pay that need to be paid.
That is true.
And that's to no mortal thing. I'm just a gambler in too deep. I have no remorse for the actions I've taken because I haven't hurt anybody.
Poor man backed into a corner, correct?
Look, if it's money you want, I've got plenty to spare. I can give you some. I've got a tithe. To you're a woman of the cloth, ain't you? You're the local priest. A tithe to your budding congregation. And to you, perhaps you want some, I don't know.
He looks at you, Graves, and just like stills and just swallows hard. And he says, well,
But there's plenty of money to spare. Plenty. But you can give some back to the town, or you could forget this ever happened, and I'll be out of your hair. Once my business is done, there will be no Daisy Man to trouble you any longer. This period of unpleasantness will be done with.
I don't think you get out that easy, my good man. I believe death would be a respite for you. It would be an end to your suffering. And for what you understand is that your suffering is not over. Your suffering will never be over. Your suffering must be taken up like a yoke under an oxen's. What I'm saying, lad, is that your time of service is not over. It has just begun. You will be using that money for good. Tiding is one part, but there's more good that needs to be done. There are poor folks that are starving. There are people that need medicine. There are people that need hand. If you want to truly be free from the yoke of your gambling debts, well, I think that you need to take upon a new debt, and that's a debt towards the Lord, your God and Savior. So I'm going to put this into your hands right now. Do you, Clarence O'Toole, stop what you're doing, this running, this senseless foolishness? And do you take upon the yoke of the Lord? Or do you wish to have it all seen washed away for nothing, and for you to be born and burned in hell as a thief and a sinner for the rest of your days? The choice is in your hands. That is how salvation works. That is your only cause, is for you to make this decision. I cannot make it for you, and neither can the Mr. Graves here.
Clarence, his eyes flick between the two of you, and he fumbles into his jacket and says, maybe we could play for it?
Oh, please. I would love to.
Let's cut away. Before we go back to the unseen, I want to hear real quick from Andrew, by the way, with the resolution, with that moment, since you get to narrate control of that. And I have a benefit that'll come into effect in the next segment.
Okay. Mm-hmm. I think Andrew and Dr. Clarkson, well, Jebediah, I think are like really, really close to each other. I think Andrew just grabs Jebediah by the collars and takes him for a sloppy kiss once again, because goddamn, despite there probably being ghosts or shenanigans happening in the background, Andrew Harrington is a very simple-minded fellow when it comes to things, and well, frankly, getting close and personal always resolves problems, doesn't it?
As you kiss back at Neil's, he tentatively pushes the door that was ajar open to the dark out behind his saloon, glances out. Hello? Is someone poking around back here? It's private property. It's business. Please see yourself out. I keep a gun under the bar. Off you go. There's more disreputable joints than mine. And like leans out and doesn't see anyone. Huh. And he goes back in and closes the door and walks back into the bar. As he enters the tap room, we see a pair of boots kicked up on a table in a corner. We don't see who they belong to. And he freezes. His eyes go wide. And he says, It's you. He hastily fumbles for a bottle of Ghost Be Gone, but realizes it's empty and looks up as we see a hammer on a gun get pulled back. Neil's face pouring sweat as he stumbles back, and we hear the gunshots go off. Let's go back to the unseen.
Barkeep, damn tarnation. The surly customer again. When the barkeep cuts him off, how does the bar make sure that the surly customer pays every penny he owns? I think that the surly customer is like at the bar asking for more drinks, asking for just more and more. And I think the barkeep just gets fed up and just pulls him over the bar and says, listen here. You've been testing my every nerve. And if you don't pay me what you owe and get out of here, we'll strung you up like a dog you are.
Back in El Paso, we see the town hall as Dr. Clarkson steps out the front doors, clapping his hands as if to say, after hard work, and looks at you, Andrew, and says, well, that should convince them, at least for the time being. I think that'll make your lives a little bit easier. Your benefit from your 13 is that with all the discontent, having Dr. Clarkson on your side now and having him outright go up into this town hall meeting and just reorient people back in the direction of favoring the Vigilance Committee. I'm going to give you this, Andrew. This is specifically just for you, though. This is going to be a... this will be manifested as a condition, but you're about to clear Marked by the Grifter anyway because the resolution of this threat. However, so the way that this is working is that the condition is going to be worded something along the lines of just like, you know, I'm blanking on the word for it, but it's like a tentative piece of some kind, like a sort of like a standstill in the rumor mongering and stuff like that. As long as you have that condition, you can clear it at any time to just like evoke an advantage on a roll or something like that. But by doing so, you have to do an action in a way that kind of like would like make the rumor mill churn about Andrew once more. So it's like he has vetted for you and kind of reoriented people towards you, which will be a condition. That's kind of like what I'm thinking for the benefit is like, as long as you have that condition, the people of El Paso are cool with you again. Like they have like good faith, and but that could change. We ever lose that condition.
Yeah. How about ordering it is all's quiet in El Paso.
I like that. I like that a lot. Now, everyone, let's just go around and hear our resolution scenes to the night phase. That's funny with Andrew, since we're just kind of on the scene already.
I think this is not a sort of a conversation we really need to roleplay out. I think Arrington, still being the flirt that he is, sort of invites Jebediah back to his place, effectively.
Very cute.
I think we see in a dark alley, we see Calamity, not the Calamity, Arkansas McGee. We see him pass the ghost of Jebediah like a glass, you know, like giving him something to drink. And we can hear him, like, as he's walking into this dark alley, we can hear him saying about the way of revenge works. It's like you got to draw it out. You can't just do it. I mean, you got to draw it out, and you got to let them get comfortable, right? And then you snatch it away. We just hear him, like him coaching this spirit of rage on how to get revenge. But he's trying to like buy some time.
I think with Clarence O'Toole's the play you for it, we'll play you for it, Mother Ruth, being just tempted and tempted and just like pushed and pushed and pushed, just sighs and hits him over the back of the head with a gold bar to knock him out and starts tying him up and looks at you and goes, What's the point to be tempting somebody's nature as such like that? Poor Lord, poor sap like this, obviously emotionally distraught.
It's the deal, Mother Ruth. We play him for it. We said we would. We do.
Who do you think you are, by the way? Stands up after hog tying this man and walks over, pokes into the chest, like the shirt, and goes, acting all strange during the assembly earlier, and not letting me touch in everything, and now doing cryptic stuff with this weird book. Everything. You know what book you should be having in your hands right now? There's something going on inside that brain of yours. And you know what you need? You need the good book. And you know what? Here, I'll take this one. Goes ahead and puts it in her pouch and then pulls out a Bible and shoves it into Graves' chest and goes, you need to get your hands right on that. Maybe go, let's start simple for ye, Mr. Graves. How about the Proverbs? The Proverbs were always my favorite, and they're the easiest to start with. You don't have to read in between as many lines, and there's not as many numbers to get your head all confused. And then maybe you can find some place. We're just killing him, poor man. While he's clearly emotionally distraught, he needs help. He's got daisies coming out of his pockets, and he looks like a daisy himself.
I was going to help him, Mother Ruth. Who do you think you are?
Me?
Yes,
who do I
you.
Think I am?
Yes, you.
Apparently the moral backbone of this whole stinking town, I would say. Why the half of ye's running around, drinking, firing guns up in the air, while the other half of you are going back and knocking boots with random people that we should be putting up behind bars because they're stealing good people's money. And then you, right here with your weird gloves, and all of a sudden, before this, you were nothing but a good old gambling man. That's all you were. And you'd come back and you'd say, I, me, Mother Calvo, I'm so sorry for all the trouble that I do and be causing people in my heart. Will you ever forgive me? And then just put a little bit of spit on your hand and you're feeling all right and good, well with the world. But no, I see what you are. You're nothing better than that old grifter Clarkson. You're just over here taking people's money and then acting like you're self-righteous and better, like you've changed overnight. I know exactly what you are. You're a false prophet, and I will not be having that happen within my city. I'll tell you that much right now. I'm taking a stand. So this money right here, it's going back to hardworking people, and this money's going to be going towards the church as well.
Fabulous. I don't care about money, Ruth. Would you like me to beg again? Is that what you want?
I'll tell you something, Mr. Graves. You take that attitude of yours, and you can put it where the sun shall not be shining for quite a long time, because the next time you even think about coming and asking me for confession, I'll tell you, you can go and confess by yourself in an outhouse. And starts, grabbing Clarence O'Toole. I shall have some good, hard-working boys come down here and pick up this money from this place and have it returned. I'll see to fit to that. You don't have to worry about doing it yourself. Actually, what am I doing the heavy lifting? You're a man. Pick him up and take him to the jail.
Graves just looks up and sighs and takes Clarence O'Toole by the, how he's been, hogtied a little bit, just... and starts dragging him. And it's just, I guess we'll finish this game at the jail.
As you drag Clarence O'Toole out from the beneath to the above, back at Neil's, as he lays dead and bleeding on the floor, we hear the spurs, the heavy boots, clunk, 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 as this mysterious figure approaches him. Smoking gun held aloft, with a flick of its wrist, opens the cylinder, which spins slightly, showing the five bullets and the one spent. the figure whistles a sharp, simple little tune, and with a fleshy, quick little gush of blood, the bullet flies out of Neil and re-slots itself back into the gun, and they flick it back into place and tuck it into their holster and walk out of the establishment. And that brings our night phase to a close, as well as the resolution of two separate threats. We are going to take a 10-minute break, and when we come back, we will introduce a new threat and start the day phase. We are going right to the dawn phase to get some rewards, do some XP. Speaking of rewards, we got two threats resolved, so we got a whole two whole sets of rewards. For the Daisy Man, we'll do that one first. I've added these into our character keeper, but I'll read them off for the audience. The options are a gold pocket watch with a daisy pattern on the back, can be added to personal quarters. A hand mirror that shows a different place, add it to your personal quarters. A large pile of money, which you can add, or two memento options. Let's have Graves and Ruth get first pick, since they were the ones who actively resolved it.
I think Ruth gets first pick because she knocked out the man.
Give me that large pile of money.
Yeah, go ahead. Yeah, that's we call that a tithe. Donation to the church.
Yes.
You may add a large pile of money, Ruth Calvo. I'm sure God would see it as a necessary evil. And what about you, Graves?
I think I'm going to take the hand mirror that shows a different place.
Go for it. All right. Andrew in Arkansas, what do you want?
Do you want the pocket watch or a memento?
I think I want the pocket watch.
So then I would ask you, Chaotic, to give me a memento.
You know what? I'm going to get, this is going to be a weird one, but I think that the Daisy Man, Mr. Tool, had a spare key to O'Neill's.
Interesting. Very interesting. Let's talk about rewards for Ghost Be Gone. Dr. Clarkson, it can be chosen as a recurring side character. He grants advantage when assisting with quieting rituals. A bottle of Ghost Be Gone, which can be added to your personal quarters. An improvised ghost trap that you can describe and add to your personal quarters. Or two mementos. Arkansas and Andrew, you get the first pick on this one.
Oh, you know what I'm going to pick.
It's Dr. Clarkson, we know. Yeah.
It's my boyfriend.
I want the ghost trap.
You want the ghost trap? Very nice. Take the ghost trap. What? Describe it.
I'm trying to think what it would look like for bait for ghost. I don't know. I think it's just... it's just some kind of like weird shadowy cage. You don't. It's just shadows that lock around a ghost. So it's just kind of shadows.
Very good. And what about Ruth and Graves?
I'm gonna take a memento and have Daniel tell me what it is.
Let me think about that.
I'm taking the Ghost Be Gone.
Right on.
Then I think I'll go with that. I think I'm going to go with that weird chemistry set that had all those bottles of like powders and metals.
That's very cool.
But it's that chemistry set that Dr. Clarkson was using.
That's very cool. I like that.
That's fine.
I also remind everybody that because the way you resolve the Daisy Man, you now have access to a special move called Spectral Form, which I've added to our list of moves on the tab. When you have the Cosmic Passage marked, you can briefly become incorporeal in order to pass through a solid object or allow a solid object to pass through you. When you do so, you take the condition Drained. If you already have Drained, you mark the Janus Mask. So that is now available to anyone who has the Cosmic Passage marked or will mark it eventually. Very good. Let's do Dawn questions. Mother Ruth. Well, first of all, for everyone, you get the first three. I assume because everyone did Echoes in the Night. I think I caught everyone from once from everyone. So, Mother Ruth, did you speak on matters of theology with anyone who would listen?
Yeah. Spoke on it with Graves. Spoke on it with Clarence. Spoke on it with the during the day phase. I spoke on matters of theology with everybody.
And did you decide not to give a damn, turning your back on righteousness?
Not yet.
Yes. Graves, did you have a misunderstanding with another character because they perceived you as the host?
I think we could count the argument with Ruth.
Yes, 100%. There's also, I feel like, something that happened last time too. But anyway, did you take time to puzzle over the human condition? I don't believe so.
I don't think so.
Very good. Marshall, did you stare mournfully at someone who reminds you of the old Marshall? No.
Not mournfully. There was a lot of staring, but not mournfully. Mm-hmm.
Did you live up to the ideal of doing justice?
Is this what we're calling justice nowadays?
No. I don't think so. And for Arkansas, did you talk about a time when you rode with Blackheart Vermilion? I recall one
with the stagecoach.
The stagecoach last time. Yeah. And did you prove to yourself that you are no coward?
I think in confronting the manifesting ghost.
Yeah, go for it. Mark your advance. Well, mark your XP. Do we have any advances that people get?
Yeah, I'm gonna pick up a stat.
Cool.
I'm taking Sawbones.
Nice. Were those the only advancements? All right, very cool. Mark new Dawn questions if you wish. I don't believe we have any playbook moves that trigger during the Dawn phase. Mm-hmm. And we did have a mask get marked by Arkansas, I believe. Do you wish to narrate that now?
Let me see what it... Yeah, I can do that. It's narrate a flashback to when you befriended an infamous shootist, Blackheart Vermilion. And so it's in Mexico, just south of the border in Chihuahua, in the town of El Terrero. And we see a bunch of pretty, some of them slick, some of them amateurs, but they're all gunslingers. And we see a younger version of Arkansas McGee. He's got no gray in his hair, and he's they're in line and they're getting hired to work for this guy named Don Gomez, who's a cattle baron who's about to go to war with another cattle baron down in Mexico. And so we see Arkansas walk up to this woman who's in this black leather with these roses embroidered on her jacket, and he says, "You're Blackheart Vermilion, ain't you?" And she nods and she says, "Yeah, and who might you be?" He says, "Are you the only looks like me and you's the only Americans this side of the border signing up for this deal?" And she thinks about it and she says, "Well, I'm mostly American." And then the camera starts to pan out and we see them just talking amongst these other desperados.
Then we move on to the day phase. Let's introduce our new threat, the Corset. Lola Navis and Diamond Dave McMahon, co-owners of the Red Rock Cantina and Dance Hall, have come to the Vigilance Committee with a terrifying story. Three dead bodies have turned up at their establishment in as many days. The first was a dancer, Luann Fontenot, who was found with her abdomen completely crushed. Her ribs were shattered, and some of her organs forced out of her mouth. The second was Sylvester Stanton, a local Lothario and Red Rock regular, who was flayed by sharpened shards of whalebone until he bled to death. Pieces of the material were found artfully arranged in his face. The third was piano player Marta Pina, who was found sitting at her piano as still as a mannequin, her blood hardened in her veins like cement. A burgundy satin corset with lacy black trim was found near each body on a dress form, as if someone had placed it there after doing the killing. Lola and Diamond Dave haven't told anyone else about these killings. They're trying to keep things under wraps so as not to scare away their remaining employees and customers. A question for Arkansas. You had a close relationship with one of the victims. Which one, and what was the nature of that relationship?
It was Marta Pena.
Mm-hmm.
And she used to be a piano player at a really rough and tumble dive bar, and he used to just sit there and listen to her play piano, and make sure that people tipped her, and then that's pretty much it.
A question for Graves. Lola and Diamond Dave reveal something that confirms the killer is actually the corset, that it's possessed by some sort of malignant spirit. What is this detail they reveal?
That every time they've gone to the would-be crime scene, there's this little trail of frost from the dress form creeping towards the body.
Lola and Diamond Dave have put the bodies in the Red Rock's root cellar. The corset is currently in their apartment under lock and key. They understand the Vigilance Committee needs to take whatever steps are necessary to get to the bottom of the situation, but nevertheless requested you don't disrupt their business by causing a panic. There are two questions available for the corset. The first, what does the corset want? Is it complexity 6? Answering that allows you to resolve the threat by striking a bargain with the entity possessing it so that it moves on. Or, how can the corset be controlled, which is complexity 8, and allows you to resolve the threat by subduing the entity possessing the corset, which will then become a reward. There is a mask associated with the corset, which is the Mask of Beauty. And so, as a new day dawns over El Paso Township, what scenes would we like to frame up? What would we like to do, members of the Vigilance Committee?
I would like a vulnerable move, please, because I'm filled up.
I was going to say, actually, well, anyone who had Marked by the Grifter could clear that, because the situation is resolved. Dr. Clarkson is now, the Grifter in question is now cooperative with you and working with the Vigilance Committee, now a member of the Vigilance Committee.
Mm-hmm. I would still like a vulnerable move.
Yeah, for sure. All right, got a vulnerable move on the table.
I can provide that. Mother Calvo is operating the church tent today.
All right, very good. Andrew Harrington, Mother Calvo will have a vulnerable move. What about Graves?
I'm always down for a vulnerable move because I'm always full up on conditions, but also I would like to go interrogate some dead bodies.
You very well could. Arkansas?
I think I'm going to clean up after my old buddy, Neil. And
yes, you heard the news.
Yeah, I'm going to clean up that mess and make sure he's buried, and then maybe take some... interview some folks for new bartender there to help keep the status quo.
All right. I like that. Let's start with Graves. Since you're paying a visit to the Red Rock Cantina and Dance Hall, which is two buildings. The Cantina is this long single story adobe building. The dance hall is an adjacent two-story wooden structure with apartments on the second floor. The root cellar is beneath the cantina, which we see a trapdoor open above, letting light cast down into the cramped, dark, earthy space of the root cellar. The faint smell of rot as well. as you descend the steps into the root cellar. There are the three corpses of the victims. Amidst various other things of storage that have probably been used for multiple different purposes over the years. Let's paint the scene about the root cellar. What down here makes you think Lola and Diamond Dave have alternative sources of revenue?
This is in the root cellar, yeah?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
There is a hole in the wall leading to the tunnels of El Paso.
I'm going to say, because they employ dance girls that dance for people. I'm going to say that there's like a basket full of like empty wallets and purses.
There are multiple fine women's clothing that you have all seen on other women throughout town.
I think there are some contraband items that may not be illegal, but they're definitely not reputable, stored down here. A variety of drugs of various sorts. Nothing's illegal because it's the 1800s, but it's not very proper.
You are accompanied by Diamond Dave himself, bartender and co-owner. He is a very slender gentleman dressed in a smart brown and white striped blue tie, and a very pristine white shirt. I can't speak. His mustache is just slightly curved up at the tips with a little bit of wax. He has this anxious, unnerved energy about him as he is escorting you down into the root cellar, and he's saying, "Yes, so this is where we keep them." Listen, I'm not the kind of man who disturbs easily, but right now I am well and truly disturbed. I mean, I slept behind the bar last night because I can't stand to be in the vicinity of that thing upstairs. I have it in my room, you know?
In your room?
Yes, in the apartments above the dance hall. I actually tried burning it at first. It burned, it did. But not an hour later, it was back and propped up in the dressing room. I could feel it looking at me, the corset looking at me. But we've got to keep going, don't we? I'm not going to have my business ruined by a haunted bustier.
Are you sure it's safe to keep it so close to you and Lola, was it?
Rather, yes, Lola. Rather close to me than to the customers or the girls.
It's very noble of you.
Mm-hmm.
Very foolish.
He kind of like puts a finger under his nose as the smell of the dead bodies is kind of wafting up a bit. Hey, do you need my oversight or shall I return to the bar?
And Graves is just weirdly unbothered by this probably very putrid, just absolutely putrid air. Just, no, you're welcome to go back up to the bar and attend to your business. I think I can handle it down here.
Splendid, great, wonderful. Holler if you need anything, Mr. Graves. Again, we appreciate your discretion. And he quickly, like, you know, sees himself back up and gently closes the trap door behind him, sealing you in the dark with the dead. What do you do?
I walk up to this row of bodies and pick whichever one looks the most recent and just address it like it's a person. I stay quiet just so it's not like this man doesn't hear me talking, but he might. Because I have, for the viewers, I have a new move called Death's Morbid Tongue that allows me to interrogate corpses as if they were side characters.
Incredible. Yes, the most recent corpse would belong to that of Marta Pina, the pianist whose blood froze like cement. So she's posed the most unnaturally of the three corpses, which is to say she's more on her side, almost in fetal position, but it's because she was seated at the bench, her hands out before her on the keys, frozen and rigid in this strange curled up position. As you begin to interrogate her, what do you say? What do you ask?
I actually sit her up properly. Mm-hmm. Maybe even if she has to lean back on something, I will, but like sit her up as if she's back at the piano. It was Marta, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Marta, what was the last thing you saw?
I'm going to ask you to roll the information move plus sensitivity.
Yes. Do I need to... Are any of my conditions an issue?
I don't think the hangman nose are prying. It's getting in the way of this for now.
Fabulous.
I really need to have the hangman nose come into play soon.
That's a 4. I rolled snake eyes.
We'll come back to this.
Yeah.
Ruth and Andrew, let's set up your vulnerable move. Set the scene and tell us whose vice we're doing, and we'll go from there.
Well, because Mother Ruth is still pious, it has to be my vice.
Ah, yes, that's right. That is correct. Well, then take it away.
I think Andrew Harrington is a little bit more cheerful as of late because, like, things are getting back to under control. It's getting pretty quiet in El Paso. And I think he's gone to see Mother Ruth just because it's been a while since, like, they had the last talked and whatnot. I think we see, like, the sort of, like, him on, like, the towns of El Paso making his rounds beforehand. And I think, like, there's, like, a fruit seller and whatnot. And, like, he just sort of a non-discretionately just sort of picks up an apple and just puts it in his pocket. Before heading over towards Mother Ruth's church tent. Mother Ruth?
Oh, and just when I thought things couldn't get any more interesting, here, who do I have darkening my doorstep but the marshal?
Oh, I don't mean to darken your day, Mother Ruth. It's been a while since we had a chat.
Confession, let me guess. You'd like to be confessing yourself? Well, let me get myself ready then.
Nothing more to confess than just sort of bad habits that I can't seem to break. But I think you should know that I've been picking up better habits as of late. Less drinking, more time being pleasant to my neighbors.
Who are you being more pleasant to now?
Well, I've showed Dr. Clarkson some compassion, even though that he did cause a little bit of a surliness for us. So turning another cheek and whatnot. And so far, he's taken time to take that Ghost Beyond stuff off the market. So, as well as, like, sort of helping decrease the rumor mill going around El Paso. So, so encouraging good behavior all around.
And do you think that this is something that maybe you should have been doing beforehand?
Maybe.
What brought about the change, dear?
I think my heart aches less.
Is this refreshing or terrifying to you?
A little bit of both, if I'm to be honest, but you seem a little bit more tense than usual, Mother Ruth. Is everything all right?
Everything's perfectly fine about me, Marshall. I'm just making sure that the eternal soul is not wallowing in damnation of our lawmen in this town.
But is there a soul that you are worried about? Because it seems like it.
I have upon my possession a strange book that belongs to one gambling Mr. Graves. Seemingly has been acting quite strange and perplexing these recent days, and I'm concerned about his everlasting soul. I'm concerned that it might not be there anymore after the troubling conversation that we had in the tunnels beneath this very town.
Might I see the book? Maybe I can offer some insight. I've come across the sea, so I might have more insight into this than you.
Do you think your regional placement makes you fare better at reading things than myself?
Different experiences, Mother Ruth. I've seen things you haven't seen, and you've seen things I haven't seen. If two heads are better than one, that's all I'm.
Lest you forget yourself that you are not the only one that is not from this wretched new world, that some of us also come from farther than England.
That's fair. Just offer to help. Just maybe bring some insight as to what it could be. Or at least how to help out Graves.
If I could read the contents of your heart, I'm sure I would blush. Pulls out the book, hands it to you.
I think as Sir Harrington is flipping it, looking at names, some of which are familiar to him, some of which. Did Graves say where he got this?
I saw him produce it from his pants, so I'm well aware that he probably wrote it himself. Some cruel trick.
If he wrote this himself, that is terrifying, Mother Cavo. Is it Ruth? This shouldn't exist. I recognize some of the names.
Are you seeing something that I'm not seeing, perhaps prattlings on of a crazed man? And you're seeing it for something that it's not?
Yes, because most of its names I don't recognize, but some of them I do recognize. And some of the names I know for a fact did not get uttered to Graves. They couldn't have been uttered to Graves because the people in this book were dead. And they've been dead for a very long time.
I'm concerned for you. I am not only concerned for Graves, but I'm concerned for you now as well. Because you're falling into false pretenses and thoughts that he might be having for himself. Delusions of grandeur. Is everyone in this wretched town bewitched by the ghosts that dwell outside in the desert? That you can't think of anything else but imagine being normal for a bit. Speak for yourself, lad.
This contains people I've known for decades, dead for a long while. This contains names of people I cared about deeply that I've not spoken to Graves. These are people who died back in England. This is a book of just dead people?
I noticed the same thing. I was wondering how long it was going to take for you to get to the same, well, understanding that I did.
Yeah. Perhaps you thought it would be explained as the graves took up the hobby of like etching sort of gravestones or something, but that's not the case.
We're going to take a moment to quickly cut away back to graves as this conversation is happening, as you are attempting to speak with the corpse of Marta Pina. There is a coldness in the air, and then a slight pop. And then another, and you realize that the body of Marta is moving slightly, joints snapping and popping their frozen blood in a twitchy, locking sort of piece by piece movement, as her eyes like flicker open. And the cold in the room is undoubtedly the presence of a ghost, but it's not her. As her eyes take on a different color entirely, as the figure with the popping of snapping blood veins and cartilage like lurches and like sits up, jolting and popping its head, twists and looks at you. You see that a hand manages to reach up to its throat and with a decisive squeeze, crack and dislodge part of its locked up and frozen vocal cords to allow speech as it... And the eyes, dead, glazed over, but a different color, look at you. And a voice that is not Marta's. Even in death, this would not be the voice of her ghost. A familiar voice, though, for some of us, as echoing out of this throat, this raspy voice is, "What are you doing here, horseman?"
"That's none of your business."
"Oh, it very well is the business of me and my own. My ventures are my own, after all. But you are a curiosity."
"And my ventures are my own. What are you doing here?"
"Oh, I was in the neighborhood. Seen you poking about a whole lot lately. What? Are you taken to this side of existence now?"
"Could say the same of you."
"I'm not so easily taken where I do not wish to be. I suppose that is one of the many differences between us. You've been quite involved in a number of scandalous affairs around these parts, haven't you? That dreadful affair, Niels. And recently I heard you had trouble killing someone. Disk, disk, disk. Just consider this a warning, Mr. Graves." "Huh? That's a funny one. Consider this a warning. I am no more beholden to you than I am to that dreadful train, or at least I won't be once we are seen and through. Stay out of my way. I'll make sure your life is not made more complicated."
It cracks and shifts slightly.
"Oh, sorry. I gotta run. But I'll be seeing you again."
"I'm sure you will."
Coughs and sputters and falls back lifelessly on the table as Edward Reynolds unpossesses the body. And you realize that in all of the popping and shifting and rigid movements as the body got up to look at you and converse face to face with this cold, almost taunting hostility, you realize that while you were engaged so firmly in conversation, one of its cold, corpse-like hands took something from you. That black onyx rosary you had on you, taken from you, and as you look in the fist, you just see the faint wisps of spectral energy leaving it. It seems that Edward wanted that rosary for some reason. You may remove that from your personal quarters.
That's not concerning at all. Mm-mm.
Arkansas. Back at, you're at Neil's doing some hiring. How's that going?
So he's drunk, and there's two guys that are passed out in Neil's, and I thought that's probably it. And he's got a sign that's up on the door, and it says, bartender wanted, no experience necessary, cowards are welcome to apply. And he's talking to the two intoxicated or passed out guys, and he's like, there's this, you know, as legend has it, the assassin, coward John Wilkes Booth, once he was on the run after killing our president, he would have gotten away, but he was going around a cemetery. And if he'd gone through the cemetery, he'd gotten away. Did you hear that, fellas? And so legend is that cowards can't go anywhere near a cemetery or hallowed grounds. And that seems like where we're at is the opposite of that. So this is a pretty good place for us to capture coward Jim McKinley. So I'm going to put that down as a clue about...
Uh-huh.
Cowards.
Uh-huh, for sure. I like that. As and they're mostly not listening. As this conversation is going, we hear outside the approach of a horse outside, and then the rustle of someone dismounting, their boots hitting the ground and walking up the porch. And you see stepping into and leaning against the door frame is Blackheart Vermilion. Who just kind of creaks into the floorboards. The other two gentlemen don't really seem to pay much attention to her. She like kind of like quirks an eyebrow at your story, and then looks at the sign, cowards need not apply.
Cowards should apply.
Oh, cowards should apply, cowards, yeah. Welcome. Yep. And she like walks up right up to you, right up to the table, like looks at the sign, looks at the two drinking, you know, slightly out of it men, then looks at you and she says, Arkansas, what the fuck?
I'm doing good work here, making good headway.
Why have you not found the coward Jim McKinley?
I'm hot on his trail. No, trust me, Blackheart, I'm hot on his trail.
She gives you an extremely confused glance of like, it looks a hell of a lot like you're just pussyfooting around the issue instead of doing anything like we talked about.
Because I am undercover, I'm not going to take offense upon your comment.
All right,
I'm deep
then.
Into character here, Blackheart.
Okay. She just nods slightly and like shakes her head before... She says, well, since you're undercover, and she pulls out a lock of her hair from her jacket and places it on the table and says, I guess I won't question your confounding methods, Arkansas. But if and when you find my murderer, summon me. And you may add a lock of Blackheart's hair to your personal quarters.
And he picks it up, he says, when, not if, it's going to happen. This coward, he cannot stand to be made fun of.
She just shakes her head slightly. Despite the confusion, there's the faintest hint of amusement. She says, I asked you to meet me at Four Aces Ranch when you're ready, and you're taking your sweet time.
No, the Four Aces Ranch is a bust. It ain't there anymore, Blackheart.
I trust your subtlety, Arkansas. Good luck with the job interviews. And she steps out of the building.
He looks over to the two passed out guys and says, that was a legend. Blackheart Vermilion, fellas, right there.
Let's go back and resolve the rest of Ruth and Andrew's scene.
Okay. So, you seem to believe what is going on inside this book. I should surely believe into it because it seems to have you quite a fright. And the poor lad was believing it clearly of what was happening.
Mm-hmm. I know people I can speak to about this. I know that I have a reputation for taking things that don't belong to me. So I won't take this without asking you if you will lend this out to me. It's only polite. It's only right.
It would be shameful of me to look upon ye in this time of need that you so clearly have, and you're desperate for any kind of assistance in anything, for me to have you return something. Think I don't know about your little trips, your hands, little trips into the, well, all sorts of things. Go ahead and take it, if it may help ye. No strings attached.
Thank you, Mother.
I've got a question, though. If you'll answer it of this old woman.
Mm-hmm.
Where are you from, really?
Oh. I don't know if you will believe me, but I will give you the truth because you trust me enough with this. I lived in England for a good chunk of my time. It's not where I was born. The country I was born in, it's been long since expanded as a country, so it really doesn't have anything to offer there. I am one of several children, unbeknownst about how many there are of us out here, because my father was a bit of a bastard of man. Thought himself to be God, honestly speaking. Had quite a bit of a following, people. Quite a dangerous following, Mother Ruth. You know how some people say, if I say jump, then they would jump. He took that to an extreme. If he said die, people would die. But I was raised by my mother. It's just the two of us. She gave me a name, an awful name. Because she wanted something to remember my father by. But Andrew's a good name.
Decent enough. I shall pray for your mother.
The reason why this book has all me so sort of scared is that my mother's name is in this book.
You shouldn't be afraid of it. Try your best not to be. Truly do not. It's something that comes for us all. And you being scared of it is not going to do any favors for yourself.
I'm not scared of death. I'm scared of what this means for Graves. Because if he has this book, because I'll be honest, I've lost about my age, Mother Calvo.
Wouldn't be the first thing you lied about.
No, and again, I don't know if you believe me. My mother has been dead for almost 60 years now.
I'm not going to push any further, for I'm afraid of what I might think or might do if I find out the truth. But I suggest that you find somebody that you could entrust to let know that.
I think with that, Andrew just turns around and, like, immediately leaves. Like, sort of a walk of shame, almost. Mm-hmm.
Well, I assume you're going to be clearing marked by the Pinkerton, if anything, because I assume you don't want to clear the other one. Mother Ruth, did you? I know, obviously, he can't really clear another condition because that would remove the mechanical benefit, but did you sermonize at all with that?
I would believe so, in a way.
You have the ability. So, Andrew, you have the option because of Ruth's new Sawbones move to add the Word of God to your personal quarters.
Ooh.
Have fun, kiddo.
Where does Andrew go after hastily and shamefully walking out?
Well, this is a strange item that he has now, so he has to go to Del Sol about it.
Very good. Ruth, what do you do when after Andrew leaves? Mother Calvo.
Mother Calvo is going to go try to hunt down Arkansas McGee.
Very good. Indeed. You cross town, and sure enough, you can find Arkansas where we left him, which is to say, running applications at Neil's for an audience of two, with a sign that says, "Coward should apply."
What was that? I was asked for a password.
Oh, no, just Mother Ruth comes and finds you. Sure enough, that is where you find him. Arkansas is in the middle of one of his yarns, I imagine.
Arkansas.
You don't want this job. It's just standing here minding this bar.
I'm not here for a position of the job here. I'm here to get you in your sense together.
Hey, what?
Your sense, Arkansas. Where is it?
He kind of like pulls you over to the side. He's like, I'm undercover here trying to find that coward Jim McKinley. What do you need?
I'm here to help you find that coward Jim McKinley, because hopefully
you're going to scare him off. He's going to see you. He's going to run off.
I'm going to scare him off.
Scare him off.
Please allow me. Please allow me to help you in some way, shape, or form. Does not involve you yelling at me or telling that I'm going to... People know who you are, sir.
No, I blend in real good. Like these two fellas here. Hey. He pokes one of them. Hey.
What the fuck are you talking about?
See? How many fingers am I holding up?
I ain't got none. Bam, head back on the counter.
Yeah, no, this is delicate. This is delicate work here.
I think
I'm the seedy underbelly of El Paso.
And that's where I should be right now, and I'm here right now. There are things going on that people are trying to investigate, but instead I have a marshal who's up to his ears and some kind of guilt-laden trip of speaking of books of dead and things, and he's scared, afeared, and frightened. And then I have another man who can't touch other people because things might happen to him, because he may or may not be the devil or some form of vindication from the God Almighty.
You talking about Clarkson?
I'm not talking about Clarkson. I'm talking about Graves, sir.
Oh, Graves is a gambler.
Clarkson is not the devil. Clarkson is just a man, a small man with small ideas.
He's got a lot of credentials that he brings to the table.
Where should we be looking for this Jim McKinley? Because I need you out here with me, Arkansas. Here. I need you
like,
here.
This is a perfect spot. There's rumors that he used to work here as, I don't know, doing what. I never seen him here. Or I would have shot him then and there.
Have you investigated anything, or are you just waiting for him to show up?
That's the plan.
Pardon me, Arkansas. I'm going to stand up and I'm going to start looking in like the back. I'm just going to make my way like behind the bar, not even worry, and start actually investigating.
Watch out for them. There's a mine shaft back there. Watch out.
You just begin rifling through drawers and shelves and belongings of these rooms to actually investigate. Incredible. You can roll a information move. It feels like plus reason's good enough for me.
That's a 7 on the die. Plus reason is a 1. That's an 8.
An 8. Very good. Let me consult my list of clues for this. Which, let's take a look here. Okay, I got it. And there's a complication. I'm gonna say there's a complication with the clue itself. You'll need to follow up on this for more information, possibly. But there's a note that either Neil wrote himself or someone wrote for Neil, hard to say. But it's a little like note for if you need a quick and reliable fence, talk to, and then it looks like someone spilled like their drink on the paper, so it's kind of like the ink is all ruined, the paper's sodden through. You now know that this fits with the fact that Neil's clearly had some side ventures as well, and there was seemingly someone in town who was a good fence for stolen goods, but the actual detailing has been ruined. So you're going to need to possibly poke around for more information about that to discern the actual nature of the clue. So you can add it to the list for now, but the actual information and usability of it is blank. Unless, of course, you mark a mask.
I'll go ahead and mark a mask.
Ooh, okay. Then in that case, it's not ruined. Actually, no, you know what I think? I think it is. It's still ruined. It's in Neil's handwriting, though. And you get the idea to find his stationery. And you can tell by matching up the little sheaf of paper to the top of the stack that this was a recently written note. So taking out just a simple piece of charcoal and rubbing it on the paper, you can finish the note with the indent that says, where is it? Talk to Clarence at the secondhand general store.
Okay.
That is your clue. The secondhand general store is supposedly a fence for stolen goods. Marshall Harrington, you return to the jailhouse. You step inside, and the way that I envision this is if you step in, you can just see the cells, like directly across the room.
Yeah.
And you can see Del Sol. He's sitting there, or leaning against the bars, but he's not looking at you. He's looking at the other side of the room, like at a corner that is in your periphery. And there is a difference in his stature. Like, his energy is different. And that's when you hear the shifting of a chair. And a voice off to the side saying, "Ah, you must be the marshal." And you pan over to seeing in the corner by your desk, seated in the chair that is across from it, is a woman you have certainly never met before. Or maybe you have, I don't know. I'll leave that up to you. Actually, because this is interesting territory. But this woman, an accent that matches yours, although far more noble. She is dressed in very well-tailored clothes, aristocratic clothes. Her skin is smooth and coppery. And most notably, hanging around her neck is a silver Ankh medallion as she is sipping from a little tea saucer. She says, "Pardon the interruption. I was hoping to find you." She sets the teacup down on the table.
Interesting. Who might you be? Because you obviously know me. That's what most people do, at least around here.
She stands very politely and says, "Indeed. I am Lady Antonia Eurydice Bathsheba Hargrave Steele, and I have come quite a distance to speak on a number of interesting matters." And I think we will actually just close it off right then and there. Leave it hanging. Yeah, leave it hanging right there. And yeah, let's go to Stars and Wishes, gang.
Holy shit. Chaotic, unless you wanted to go, I don't want to interrupt you.
God, you just stopped right there. Ah! I had a perfect response in that everything. Go ahead.
Okay, I didn't want to interrupt anyone because I'm loud and I gush and I will accidentally talk over any
the gush.
Listen, when I'm given an opportunity to tell you all how fabulous you are, it's absolutely stunning. Alex, you did not pull punches at all this sesh. It was really, really fun. All of these different, the conditions, the new side characters. I didn't even know what you were going to do for that fail. And that bringing in Edward was a really cool, like, but obviously, you know who I'm the most excited about. Ah! Oh my gosh, yes. And as always, your voice is so good. I pretty much instantly knew who it was the moment you opened your mouth every time. And it's just stunning work as a keeper, because you have to voice so many different people and you do a really good job of differentiating them instantly. Fabulous. Just killing Neil? Crazy. A crazy decision. And I love it.
The Ghost Be Gone threat was still active, and therefore I had to pick someone to kill. So
Jesus Christ, you did. I forgot. I was like, why did you do that? But like, well.
I honestly thought that you may have, like, were just putting that out there just in case we did manage to mess up not resolving the mystery. But no, you killed Neil.
Well, I mean, like, if you hadn't resolved the mystery, it would have counted as a clue, which you wouldn't have been able to use, but you did resolve it still, so. Oh
my God.
I picked Neil. Plus, it felt interesting.
It did. It was really, really, really good. It was very good. Stars to Wes, As always, I love Mother Ruth. I love her. You did such a fabulous job of it's always really fun to do scenes with you, just as a general rule as a person. And Mother Ruth is you're so quick at comebacks isn't quite the right word here, but you're really quick with her to be like, are you fu no, absolutely fucking not. Absolutely fucking not. And it feels very right. And she feels so done. And I really love her. And I'm very excited to see how she handles being involved with the Rite of Blackheart Vermilion. Thank God someone is helping Arkansas with that. Thank God. And I really loved your scene with Andrew about you are also not from America. And you also and just the way you were prompting him about oh, who are you with? Who are you being nice to? Talk about your boyfriend. But no, very, 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 very good. Absolutely 10 out of 10. Arkansas, holy shit. Well, A, your new move, which I imagine you will discuss more about later, but I have read and that you used. Daniel, that's such a cool move. That is such a cool custom move, dude. That's del it's delicious. It's delicious. And I really loved your little flashback with Blackheart Vermilion, how you guys met. That's so, every new piece of information we get about their relationship, it feels so real and feels so present. And it makes that threat, that little mission feel more necessary. And I really loved also the cowards apply. That's very fun. Taking your hat off for President Lincoln tickled me. My gosh. And also, before I forget, Ruth hitting Clarence over the head with a gold bar was astounding. That's hilarious. What the hell is wrong with her? That's very good. I'm chaotic, Andrew. Oh my goodness. That backstory, the little reveal, the reveal about your dad. What? I mean, I'm not going to say any theories on here. I'm not going to say any theories on recording. I have thoughts, but I won't say them because this is such a cool backstory for him to have. I love that you chose the route you chose with the ghost be gone with your new bow. That's a really fun way to resolve that threat. And yeah, I really, yeah, just this was your scenes had a lot of emotional weight to them, and you just ranged the spectrum of it today. And it was really cool to get to see all of these different sides of Harrington, especially outside of the old Marshall. It's his own feelings now, not just residual feelings about someone else. And that's really cool. That's a really cool character development. I'm just very excited to see how this goes. The corsets also, whoever wrote that's a really fucked up thread. I'm into it. 10 out of 10, good job. My wishes, I'm just excited to see what happens next. I'm like, It won't be available next week, so I'm gonna have to watch whatever the hell you guys do. Yeah, it's my wish to get to watch you guys do some wild shit.
I've got some. Let's see. For Alex, I really liked you putting in the town hall scene where they're getting ready to oust us. That puts heat on the Vigilance Committee, and it seemed like with both with you and Kiara, I got that the Dr. Clarkson and Andrew the both of them softening and talking with such sweet and kind words. And then the ghost of the real Dr. Clarkson was pretty scary. I like when Clarence tried to bribe Mother Calvo and Graves. That was good. And I really liked Edward's response that he was in the neighborhood. You're like in a basement with dead people, and he just happened to be. That was really cool. For Chaotic, big star for getting all prettied up for Dr. Clarkson and using your sweet talking voice. Well, I mean Jebediah. And this is just a book of dead people. That whole thing was really cool. For Wes, Pious Mother Calvo is definitely a force of nature. Your suffering must be likened to a yoke, and I know a good book that you need, you know. Put that book. I got a book for you. I wonder what it could be. Somebody imagine being normal. Not in this town. Bringing the book of the dead to help with the trap was really cool, and finding the name of the person that Clarence was trying to free with his deal with the devil. A big star there, and a star for that imagery of the trail of frost coming from the bodies to the corset. So big star there. Wishes. Oh yeah, Red Rock Cantina. Let's go get a drink.
Definitely got to give a star for Alex for just Dr. Clarkson, who remains every single time to like throw me off a little kilter of just like, oh yeah, like I got him like bad, and like he like I can do this, and you're just like no, which is just very funny. Like Dr. Clarkson has Andrew wrapped around his little finger, so that's just very fun. I'm also very glad that we managed to get onto the good graces of El Paso once again. It's fine. We're okay. I really like the scene with Mother Ruth, because she is perpetually disappointed in all of us. None of us can do right in her eyes. Like, it's just like, oh, Graves, he's like this weirdo. Like, he's speaking about like all these things, like these supernatural things, like the ghosts have gotten to his head. It doesn't make sense. There's got to be rational explanation for this. And I'm just like, you're the religious person here. You should have a little bit more faith, which is just very funny. As well as just like, Andrew has been getting involved in people where he really should not get involved with. This is a terrible idea. Even though, by and large, it has worked out. Like, this is not the worst thing he's done in his life. But as well as it gave an option of, like, for me to develop things with Andrew, because I am very glad I got my hands on the Book of the Dead, and I really want it to give it to Del Sol. Maybe for some, in exchange for some interesting information, but that will come later. But yeah. I definitely wish for that scene with Lady Antonia, because he may not know her directly. He does know the name of Hargrave. And because of like how things have shook out, I'm just adjusting some things in the terms of the timeline. Don't worry about it. It's fine.
I am worried. I am deeply concerned. Andrew Harrington, for the crimes of just being a poor little baby. Come on. Get it together, bud. What's going on? Have you tried praying about it? I know that might be insensitive, but I do enjoy the moments that we've had with Andrew today. Such an interesting character. And there's a lot of like levels work that you're doing right now with that. So that's very, very cool. I can't wait to see more. I hope we get to see more of Andrew's story unfold, and you don't just like throw him away soon before we see every single mask. So I'm very excited about that. Mm-hmm. B, Gnar, you are a menace, and you should be locked away for your crimes committed. Excellent little resolving of the Daisy Man. Did not expect that to go into a like religious introspective like kind of like discussion about like I don't know about like the nature of like what should be done with this guy, and it's like, we should play the game, and being like, are you foolish? Are you dumb? Like, what are you talking about playing the game and everything? That's what a sociopath says. Are you a sociopath? Quick, don't answer that. That's exactly what was going through Rue's mind. And so that was very fun to play with you. Daniel, what the fuck is going on in Arkansas's brain? How can we help this man? Simply removing the alcohol is not enough. There must be something else done to save him. And I am deeply interested in seeing where his journey goes, and I can't wait to finally see. That's my wish. I want to finally see Blackheart and Arkansas reunited, and maybe for a quick moment, just a scant moment. They are. I mean, he's refreshed. He's anew, but then probably going right back to that just terrible soup that is his brain. And speaking of terrible soup brain, Alex, fantastic and awful crimes that you've wrought upon us all. I think you should be ashamed of yourself. I think that we should get a refund from where we got you. But I'm not going to turn you in. I just want the refund because I want the money, like the large pile of money that you gave me. Great stuff. Great pacing today. There was like a lot of potential for the stuff that that we were doing to like get like overdone or long-winded or anything. And you kind of very much made sure that everybody had their moments, which was nice. I appreciate that, especially if like me being like hyper aware of what I'm doing at all times. And so you make me feel like I'm not insane. So that's great. So thank you for that, Star, for that. But also you make me feel like I'm insane. So I'm taking that back, but also not taking it back. But yeah, that's me. The rambling, incoherent and otherwise. I'm stoked. We're all having a good time.
Yeah, this was really fun. One, I mean, we've had a couple weeks off, so this was a great return to form. I wasn't entirely certain if I was going to introduce the corset or not, but kind of with how the session was going, I was like, I mean, I feel like it's time for Lady Antonia to show up, mostly for if nothing else, for my own selfish desires of wanting to roleplay her again. But that was a lot of fun. I really enjoyed the scene with Andrew and Dr. Clarkson with the gentleness and the freshly shaved. And I don't know, did not see that going the way it did from the jump, but I really liked it. I really liked how I felt like it connected really well to this whole like kind of like saga with Andrew as a character. So I wanted to reward that by getting the heat off of your back a little bit. So I felt like that scene was really great. B also just really enjoyed your scenes down below with Mother Ruth, Graves in that whole conversation, also talking to Clarence. And that's also a star for Wes. That's just a great scene. Really love Daniel with the fact that it's just being like, 4A's is a bust. I'm running job interviews. I'm undercover. Really just kind of this man put out a cardboard sign that said for hire and is doing it with like all of the intensity of like statecraft. And it's very fun. I really like Arkansas as a character. Really enjoyed how you contextualized that scene with the ghost as well, to kind of like grab a beer with the dead. That was great. Yeah, just overall, this is setting up a lot of fun stuff. I'm excited to see how things are going to shake out. And I know we got some stuff that's marked that I'm excited to have narrated next time. And yeah, I mean, that's just basically it. I echo everything. So my other wishes are just like, damn, I really want to see some more mastermind clues pop up. I got to start doling those out. Like, I need to get the masterminds a bit more involved. Can't let them fall into the wayside. So yeah. But
as if one did not pop up and like have a whole scene today.
Yeah, that's true.
Scary voice. You're doing good with that. You're doing good with that. They're very ever present and spooky.
I like doing Edward's voice, but I feel like we need some Isabella love. All right. Any other stars or wishes?
What if he popped up and started scatting? I had that quick thought real quick. Is like, yeah. Instead of just starting bleed up, bada bada ba.
All right, everybody, wave goodbye to the camera.
Bleed up, bleed.